Senate Education Committee. It's April 7th, 2015. It's 3:30. We've got three bills we're going to hear today. Three of these bills, these are three bills that have been introduced in the past and have been heard. SB 79 is reemployment of retired teachers and administrators. SB 89 has to do with parent rights, education, school absence. And SB 37 is sexual abuse, assault prevention. And Senator McGuire's office is going to be talking about that bill. So, again, if we could turn off our phones, any other noise makers we have, that would be great. So, again, purpose of the meeting today is three bills. We're first going to take up SB 79. It's a bill that will allow school districts to hire retired teachers, actually educators, so that includes teachers, principals, superintendents. The committee heard SB 79 on March 26th, and then on the 31st, a committee substitute has been adopted. Public testimony was left open.
So I direct your attention to committee substitute for Senate Bill 79 version E, which was adopted on March 31st. I'm going to find my version of E. There we go. Does anyone have any amendments to offer?
I do, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins.
Yes, I move amendment. I'm checking numbers here, whether this is one or two.
Should be one.
The amendment number one.
I object for purposes of discussion. Do we have somebody that would like to speak upon this amendment? I believe we do.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Is this the amendment that says Senator Dunleavy on it? No.
This is the one that says is
E1.
Okay.
4450.
Yeah, 44E.
Right.
Yep. Are we all on the same? The CS should say 29LS044/E. And it's got Wayne. Okay. So, Sheila, can you please explain the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sheila Pearson, staff to Senator Dunleavy. The amendment before you came on behalf of discussions between Senator Dunleavy and the Department of Administration. What this amendment does is requires the school districts, when they hire a retired educator, to continue to pay the 12.56 rate towards the teacher's retirement system as if the teacher or educator was an active employee. This in turn will help the teacher retirement fund, and it won't be a drain on the retirement fund by employing the retired educator. And the amendments are in two sections. Page 1, following line 13, it adds a subsection C that requires a school district to pay this 12.56 rate, a contribution rate to the retirement system. This thought is continued on page 3, following line 2, that amends current language to make it clear that members who are retired from the defined benefit plan and reemployed under the retire rehire plan, the school district must pay the same rate as calculated on their total salary.
So just to add, just briefly, the idea once again of this bill was to give school districts tools to expand their pool of educators on the retired end. We do this often on the front end when we're training and we're mentoring new teachers. This was another tool. The hope was it would be another tool. We got into a discussion with the Department of Administration, and it was a good discussion with Mr. Boucher and the commissioner. And basically what the discussion centered around was we're trying to build a pool, but we're also trying to give another aspect of the tool would be to give districts a little bit of relief potentially in saving costs. And that's where the discussion kept, we had quite a discussion on that. In other words, where does the state pay? Does the state pay on the retirement end of it and paying into retirement? Does the state pay school districts? And as we enter this period of potentially declining revenues over time, how do we give districts the tools to be able to continue to conduct business, but at a less expensive rate, but also, again, building up a pool of educators. So lots of discussion, good discussion. I don't know if Mr. Boucher wants to come up and just add, if anyone has any questions, if you'd like to come up and sit next to Sheila. Not that you would like to, but if you would come up and sit next to Sheila. But it was a good discussion, and I think we got to a place where it addresses some of their concerns, because I think part of the concern was that if this bill was passed the way it was, there might be a rush on the bank, to say. There might be a number of people that want to leave the currently the system, retire, collect their retirement, and then try and get contracted. And so, again, it's trying to find a balance between helping school districts without it necessarily costing the school districts more or the state more. So, Mr. Boucher, if you just wanted to talk briefly about our conversations, that'd be great.
Thank you, Senator. Yes, Chairman.
You're with whom and who are you?
John Boucher, Department of Administration Deputy Commissioner. And as our conversations unfolded, one of the bigger levers that we were concerned about is when you bring in a large retiree pool of workers, and those are not subject to the regular contributions, well, that means the overall contributions to the retirement system would go down proportionally with their participation. And so that particular, in the calculation of, for instance, the unfunded liability and those types of things, it would end up potentially shifting costs to the state in terms of the unfunded liability because of the lower wage pool. And so this is one tool that we think will make a substantial difference in terms of that particular piece of the puzzle.
Any questions for Senator Stevens?
I guess I just don't really understand this. If a person retires and they're receiving their retirement from the state, and then they go back to teaching, they're not going to draw any more from the retirement system. They are not a member of the retirement system. They are hired under their retirement, and we're paying them something in addition. So I guess it seems like a sort of unnecessary penalty to the district to pay into a fund from which the employee gets no benefit.
Senator, I do agree with you on that principle. I think, however, as we've looked at it actuarially, what essentially happens is you're replacing people who are would anticipate it to be covered wages with uncovered wages. And so the overall wage pool upon which the contributions are made results in a lower contribution to the system, which then can potentially shift costs to the unfunded liability.
Now, I understand it's a problem that you have, but it seems like it's an unnecessary punishment for someone who's not going to be drawing anything more from the system. They get nothing more out of it. They're not getting any retirement benefits in addition, but yet we're asking the districts to fund. I'm having trouble understanding the rationale there.
You weren't the only one. It was a very long conversation. Senator Gardner and then Senator Huggins, please.
Okay, so just to make sure I understand, under this proposal, there's no direct impact on the employee because they're not paying into the retirement system if they're a retiree hire employee. Their employer is, but they are not. Is that correct? Okay, and there's no impact on the students, and there's no impact on the Department of Education. There's an impact on the district, which now is paying a higher cost for the retiree hire employee, and there's a benefit to the retirement system as a whole, because it's helping to fill the underfunded portion. Is that correct?
That, through the chair, Senator Gardner, that is correct. What I think the district would most likely, from the district's point of view, I'm trying to put myself in their position, what they would be saving potentially is the health care premium and costs associated with that. So that would I think, be in the financial favor of the district under this particular
plan. Thank you.
Plan.
So, Mr. Chair, it reduces perhaps the eagerness of a district to look for retired people that they can rehire, but it keeps open the option where they have a person who is qualified, experienced, and interested, but the savings for the district is less than it would otherwise have been.
That is correct.
Yeah, the savings will be less than the 12.5. It was a very interesting conversation. I wish you all were there. That's why I invited Mr. Boucher up. It was pretty interesting. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Boucher, it seems to me like we have a kind of unique time frame right now where we have probably Tier 1 and Tier 2 people that could be on the cusp of retirement. Is that correct? Who do contribute to the retirement system?
Through the chair, that is correct. And also their wages tend to be on the upper end of the teacher scale, too. So when you remove them from the overall payroll pool, they would probably be above average, so to speak. They would have an above average impact on the overall payroll of the system.
Right. So, but the observation for it is true today is probably less true 10, 12 years from now if this system was still in effect, if Tier 1 and Tier 2 people are starting to be a minority of retirement. But we'll save that for another day. Mm-hmm. What my question for you, though, is let's say I retired, I get hired back, the school district pays the 12.56. Do I get any longevity benefit on the end of my retirement from that? Is that a drain?
In this, through the chair, Senator Huggins, in this particular plan, no. This would essentially be assisting the state in terms of the unfunded liability and not growing the unfunded liability due to these actuarial calculations.
Okay, so let me ask it a different way to make sure I got. Is it when I get rehired, does it matter what my retirement looks like? That's the way it is. And working for another 2, 5, 10 years doesn't increase my retirement benefit.
Through the chair, under this plan, that is correct. However, if you chose to go back and become an active TERS member again.
Yeah, it's a whole different
thing.
That's a whole different thing. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, the this is a different part, but still I think is important for us is retirement incentives. For people that we give an incentive to retire, that takes that and it comes back under this provision appears to be double dipping to me. But help me out on that, Mr. Boucher.
In terms of?
Yeah, so I'm in the Mat-Su School District. The Mat-Su School District says we're going to offer a retirement incentive program in the year 2016. Mm-hmm. And Huggins, if you retire, we're going to sweeten it by you name what the sweetener is. I retire, and 6 months later, whatever the number of months or years it takes, then I'm back on the rolls. But you just paid me to retire, but I'm going to rehire you. That appears to be incongruent. Yeah, go ahead.
This particular approach?
Well, no, I'm just trying to make sure my logic is correct.
Sure.
I'm not always logical.
I can help you up front.
Yeah, help me.
Okay, so just an example. I retired after 23 years. I retired. My mother was ill. I wanted to retire. I retired to go back and see her. So I was done with the program. Long story short, got a call, and I was offered a contract with the Department of Education to help be the program manager for the Mentor Project. My service with TRS was severed. I was collecting my retirement, but I was not building up any retirement because it was totally severed. In other words, I could have gotten a job at a hotel, driving a cab, whatever. It had no bearing on my retirement, did not build up retirement. I was severed. I was finished with that at that stage of the game. So I received just a straight contract, performance contract is what I received. On the incentives to retire, the state has had some of those in the past, and districts have had some individually. For example, the Mat-Su uses its ARRA money, its one-time money, to incentivize retirement of high-end people to reduce costs. And part of that agreement was they wouldn't be employed by the Mat-Su. Now, they could go somewhere else, and if another district wanted to pick them up, they could pick them up in another district. But there is no incentive to retire under this program. There's no direct incentive to retire. There was a discussion that we had that it might motivate a whole number of folks to retire, but that's kind of where the discussion, I wouldn't say broke down, but we differed, and that was, this was an actuarial theory that a whole host of folks could retire, and my contention was, I don't think this bill is going to be a motivator to have people retire, because they would have to assume they're going to be contracted right after that. So I don't know if I helped you with the logic.
No, I don't see that in this bill. My point is, whichever school, it's X, Y, or Z that offers retirement incentives, it just appears to me the average Alaskan says, well, why do we pay that person to retire if we're going to just rehire them? But for another day.
I think I understand your concern, Senator. I don't think that's a factor in this particular bill.
So basically, you were almost like, it sounded like you were there with the conversation I was having with John, and that was why, you know, we went around and around for about an hour and a half. It was a good conversation. I mean, it was animated, but it was very positive, and they were very helpful. But basically, the state gets a 12.5% cut to go back into the retirement to help with the unfunded liability is what this is. I didn't necessarily agree with it, but I understood it after the conversation with the actuarial theory. It still gives school districts a tool, because theoretically speaking, an individual can come into a school district with 30 years of fantastic experience, and like we talked about, maybe a rural school district, and they could get picked up for 50, 60, 70,000, whatever it is, and then it's a 12.5 put on that, but they would still be much less expensive for that school district. They would still be much less expensive for that school district, and that school district would have the benefit of their experience. And so that's why we agreed to the 12.5%. Not ideal, but. Senator.
Thank you. To the extent that the bill creates, if it does, any incentive for a particular teacher to retire when they hadn't otherwise planned to, and then rehire back with the district, and that teacher continues to receive retirement during the rehire period, is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, yes, that is correct. They would receive their full pension benefit as well as whatever contracted salary they had with that employer.
So they're getting their pension benefit for a longer period than they would have done if they continued as an employee until they were finished with working. So doesn't that create a larger imbalance in the unfunded liability, a greater unfunded liability?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, to the extent that we could identify how long you were incentivized, for example, if the behavior changed under this plan, then which would take some time for us to figure out, you know, how people mm-hmm. were actually going to behave. But yes, you are correct that it could. And so I believe that this 12.56 will somewhat offset that behavior. Partially, too, I think when the actuary looks at it, they're saying you're replacing potentially covered wages that would have otherwise had the 12.56% on them with wages that do not. And so you have a covered program, a larger, let's say, you know, one-third of your teachers took advantage of this. Well, that meant potentially one-third of your payroll, which would have otherwise been higher. So the overall level of that 12.56 contributions would be lower in the absence of this, it would be higher in absence of this particular bill, or this particular amendment, sorry.
Senator Stevens, and I could go back. Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I didn't see, I think the idea behind the bill is really good. I really like the idea. But I did not see it as someone retiring from a full-time position and coming back in a full-time position. What I see it, and telling personal stories, my favorite professor in my entire college career was Dr. Terrell. He taught a class called World Literature. It was a required class at the college I went to, and he retired. And they kept bringing him back to teach the class because nobody taught it better than he did. He was just an amazing professor. But he only taught that one class, and he was retired.
and probably drawing retirement. I never thought about that when I was, you know, freshman in college, but I assume he got retirement, and he wanted to come back to teach one class. And I would like to do that, too, you know, if I ever get out of this job. Next time I'm thrown out, I'll maybe teach one class. That's all I want to teach. And that's how I saw it happening, not necessarily someone leaving a full-time job and coming back in a full-time job. Now, maybe I misunderstood your intention there, but that's the way I thought of it. It looks to me, when you think of who wins and who loses on this, as a former school, as former president of a school board, the school boards lose because we now have to pay more money than we had planned to pay into a retirement system. Who wins? The system. What is the system losing in when someone retires? I just don't see the equity here.
I agreed with you. I mean, logically, and this is not what John was saying, but logically, the best thing to happen for the system is that we would all work to about 37 years in the system, and then the day we think about retiring, we drop dead. And I don't want to sound morbid, but that way there's no retirement collected. We paid into it, no retirement collected. I didn't want to go round and round on the models and the logic. I was trying to get a we're running out of time, and I figured I'd try and get a tool. I'm not necessarily interested in pushing something that doesn't work for districts. I would like to get it out of the committee, because then it can go to Committee on Regional Affairs, where Senator Bishop is the chair, and it could get more discussion. But again, I had these discussions with John and the commissioner. I said, you've got to help us get tools for these school districts. I mean, we can't, and I'm not pandering when I say this, but I said, we can't reduce funding going to school districts and maintain the same cost drivers. We have to help them out. And so I'm thinking that the commissioner is thinking this through, and I asked Commissioner Designee for DOR up at the finance meetings this morning and this afternoon, same thing. What are some tools you can give school districts for relief and cost drivers? And so that was the idea. But the idea was never you retire and the next day you're hired back and it's a scam. That was not the intent. Really, the intent was, based upon my experience with the Mentor Project, a lot of good urban teachers that mentor under a contract and then start to express a desire to go out to rural Alaska, go to high risk or high turnover areas and give back almost in a way, because they're not going to be paid once they retire. They're not going to be paid what they were at the high end in the urban school districts per se. But that was the idea. Yes.
Mr. Chair, that's a new way to me of looking at the bill, because I had understood it to be an effort to help districts find the teachers that they're unable to find, people like special ed teachers or somebody that's highly qualified in a particular area and they just can't find them. We had testimony, I believe, last week about the small pool of applicants for the current job opening. So that's what I thought this was. I didn't see it as an effort to maintain, to change the cost drivers for districts as a cost savings measure.
It was a combination. Mm-hmm. It was a combination to build a pool on the end when folks are exiting. It was to help them with reduced costs, and it was basically a more experienced pool for folks to draw upon. I mean, it was a combination of factors was the idea.
So, Mr. Chair, if I might ask you, would you anticipate that if somebody's at the end of their career with 25 or however many years of experience and they come back on a contract, that they would have roughly the same wage scale translated to contractual terms, or would they come back?
I don't know. I think, again, if I'm using the Mentor Project as a model, that was a straight X amount of money that was offered, and that was it. There was had no relationship to the school district you were with or what your pay scale was. It was what the Department of Education was contracting for at that time. So I don't know the answer to that. I don't know.
Thank you. And the last question, if I might, on this issue. So if the districts are picking up the 12.56% of the cost, does that mean it's and pays the roughly same scale to teachers? Does that mean they're sort of even?
Well, the best answer I could give you is, let's say a teacher X is in a certain school district, and they retire after 25 years. Let's say they were at $70,000. I'm just making this up. $70,000 on the wage scale, and they retire. They collect their retirement. And let's say they decided to go teach somewhere out far west in rural Alaska, and they're offered $40,000 in a contract. Well, for them personally,
they're making, let's say, 35 plus 40 is 75, but the school district's only paying 40. So they get to go, they have a guarantee of health insurance and the retirement. They get to go somewhere where maybe they, again, want to go and help or haven't been before, and the school district is paying them a lesser amount. The school district gets the benefit of their experience, a little less on the cost, and the individual gets to go to a place maybe they want to go but didn't go for whatever reasons in years past.
Will we be hearing from school districts?
We did last, I think, a week or two ago.
Right, but with this amendment.
I would hope after today when it goes to CRR, Community and Regional Affairs, that we hear from them as well.
Thank you. And not to belabor the point, but I guess when I look at this, I think of somebody who's at Sitka School District, retires and continues to work as a contractor in Sitka.
Yeah, and I'm not saying this would prohibit that, but I also know there's a lot of folks that talk about movement to other places in the state they've never been and want to help out.
Thank you.
Senator?
I guess the question I'd have to ask is, if we were in a perfect world where we had a retirement system that was sound, that was, the money was there to pay for the retirement, and not like the system we have, where we are in enormous debt, if we had a perfect system, I don't see why we'd be doing this. I don't see why we'd be charging school districts to rehire teachers. The reason we're doing this is because we have how many millions of dollars are we behind in our retirement system?
It's multiple billions. The last, I believe, it's about $8 or $9 billion.
Yes. So I guess the question I have is if that wasn't the case, if we had managed our retirement well, if our system was in balance, why would we even consider charging school districts to put money into a system when nobody's getting anything out of it? The employee isn't, the teacher isn't, the district isn't, and all we're doing is trying to prop up a system that's failed.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, that's a reasonable question. A hypothetical, I don't know. I just know the situation we're in right now for the current unfunded liability is very large, and we're doing our best not to add to it through whatever moves we make.
I understand. I understand the position you're in. It just seems to me like it's a pretty grasping thing to take it out of school districts. So.
Any more questions? We have folks online, but before we go there, Senator Huggins?
Mr. Chairman, as I recall, there's a 0.49 limitation on rehire. If you would explain that.
Currently, what's in place, and I would look for a lifeline if I get this wrong, is an individual that retires can come back at 0.49
right.
in TERS and get paid on the scale, et cetera, et cetera. They can collect their retirement, but it's limited to 0.49. Do you know anything about this?
No, I'd have to call my...
You need a lifeline, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So that currently exists. This would be a situation where they could work full-time but be under, a contract with no benefits being paid into the system except for this amendment with the 12.5, but no health care, none of that, and they're relying on the retirement benefits.
But if I might, I mean, that's the strength of what's being proposed is you lift that 0.49 so that a district can get a full-time teacher at a rate that would be affordable.
Mm-hmm. And they get it's experience, building experience pool of individuals on the other end of end of their career. Yeah, that was the idea. Any more questions at this stage of the game? So I'm going to remove my objection. And if there is no objection, Amendment 1 has been adopted. Now we have several people online, and I'd like to go to those folks online. Thank you, Mr. Boucher. Lisa Paraday, are you online?
Yes, sir.
Could you please identify yourself for the record and who you're with and begin your testimony?
Yes, thanks. My name is Lisa Stiles-Parody. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators, in the Alaska Superintendents Association. And I spoke at length in the last meeting in support of this on behalf of our organization. But just as a quick recap and with regard to the amendment, we are in a basic supply and demand time where the shortage of teachers and administrators in Alaska is staggering. The data supports that. I won't revisit it since I went through it specifically in the last meeting, but suffice it to say that, you know, we have over 700 positions currently posted, and just not enough supply to meet that demand. And so really encourage the committee to pass this out. I, too, spent considerable time with the Department of Administration. Appreciate Deputy Boucher and the concerns they have about additional liability. Our organizations, of course, would prefer not to have the amendment because it is viewed as a tool at a desperate time, particularly as we're suffering from devastating cuts being proposed. And so we do not support the amendment. However, if the bill won't move without it, then it would be better to have the option available to districts than to not have the bill pass at all. So we appreciate everyone trying to find compromise to make this work, and just appreciate the consideration by the committee members, and just encourage you to strongly consider passing this forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate your help here. And I don't know if you can answer this question or not. Maybe you don't have the information, but with the amendment, is there any cost savings anticipated for districts to rehire retired people? That's the first question. And then is there any concern about unanticipated consequences of people retiring when they otherwise wouldn't have, simply to take advantage of this option? And so there would be not necessarily an increase in the available pool of teachers.
Thank you, Senator Gardner, through the chair. I'll answer them in reverse if it's okay. That is part of the discussion that we had with the Department of Administration, and I think it is obviously their position that it will incent additional or, you know, rush to retirement. It is, I think, educators' perspective that retirement is a very serious decision that people, you know, work on them. And you know, deliberate about over time. And I think because of the one-year break that was put forth in the revised edition of this bill, I mean, you've already reduced or put a chill towards that race to retire. And, you know, one key is that retire and rehire is really two separate steps. There is that year break, and I think I would disagree that there will be an incentive by teachers and that there will then be additional folks available. And, you know, one of the things that we discussed is it's going to look different in each district. If you are fortunate enough to have a retired special ed teacher in EAC or, you know, Point Hope, that you could bring back into the school district, that's going to be worth more to a district than maybe a more urban district that has additional retirees. And so I think it's going to look different in each district, but at the end of the day, it's a necessary tool to help fill these positions that at this point districts are really struggling to fill. So I don't see it as being a major incentive, and appreciate that question. In terms of cost savings, I think you certainly lower the cost savings if the amendment passes. You know, the idea is that you, as a district, seek cost savings with your health care costs. This may be, for lack of a better term, not a good way to think about it, but I look at it as kind of at-will employee. You know, these are individuals who have the skills that you need, meet the federal and state requirements to be able to fill those positions, and you contract with them to fill that void, similar to how you would with an at-will employee. you know, not impacting more, in, you know, not taking from the retirement or adding to. And I know that with this amendment, it would reduce the cost savings to districts. So without it, I think the districts both receive two benefits, cost savings and the ability to fill some positions that they really are struggling to fill at this point in time.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Lisa Perry?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Senator?
Thank you, Ms. Perry. I really appreciate your comments. So I think what I understand you're saying is that this is a tool that you would have an employee who's at will. You can let them go at any time. They have no tenure. They could be part-time. They could be full-time. It just seems to me that on the surface, it's a great way for districts to have another tool. I won't go back and argue amendment number one, but I better just leave it right there, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Thank you, Ms. Powerday. Next online, we have Jack Walsh. Jack, are you online?
I am, Senator.
Please, Jack, identify yourself for the record, who you're with, and begin your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Jack Walsh. I'm the superintendent for the Craig School District, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to the committee. I've been listening since the beginning of your meeting and do appreciate the different comments that have been there. The reason I wanted to testify on this bill is that I do believe that there are things about this bill that are very positive for us, but I did want to suggest that as the comments came up about the, you know, working people that work for us less than half-time, the .49 kind of provision that exists, this bill would eliminate some of the savings already allowed for that. And in recent years, when the Department of Administration has felt that the retirement system was in the financial straits it was, they've actually ignored that provision and tried to force upon districts us to pay a larger percentage as PERS employees because they felt their time that they were working qualified them as PERS employees, and that's something we're still trying to rectify after 2 years of struggles on that. The cost savings for teachers, I believe, would be significant because it does allow us to look at contracts and things which, generally speaking, tell us that when teachers with lots of experience leave and we go to hire them back as retired people, and I'm not talking months later, but as an example, this year I had a maternity leave in another situation where I would have gladly found a retired teacher from our district to fill it, but I felt I might put their retirement at risk and our cost could be, we could also take on some liability there. But there are things about using those teachers that are retired that bring some institutional history and some really good experience and expertise. And the contracts generally say we can only let them come in with 5 or 6 years of experience as opposed to 20, and so there's some significant savings there. In Craig, immediately before I became the superintendent, we had a late retirement or late resignation of a superintendent, and they went back to a former superintendent from the district who hadn't been the superintendent for 3 or 4 years and said, is there a chance you would come back and help fill that gap? And it really benefited Craig to have that kind of expertise available to him. And again, with all the turnover we've seen in principal and superintendent positions, this is a pool of people that we really need to be able to attract and bring in. They have a skill set and experience that's critical to the success of schools. And, you know, each one of these turnovers can be a significant setback to a district if you're not careful in thinking about that transition. So I appreciate your time, and those were the comments I was hoping to make.
Questions for Mr. Walsh? Thank you, Jack. Next online, we have Chris Reitan from Galena. Chris, are you there?
I am. Good afternoon.
Thanks, Chris. Go ahead and identify yourself for the record, who you're with, and begin your testimony.
Yes, this is Chris Reitan. I'm the superintendent with Galena City School District. And a lot of my testimony will be very similar to what you heard from Lisa Parody. She did a very nice job. I believe Senate Bill 79 is essential right now for the state of Alaska to ensure that we have high-quality teachers and administrators to work with our students, particularly in these challenging economic times. We are not the draw that we used to be in regards to the lower 48 of filling our positions, and it is getting much more difficult. And personally, I would rather have someone with solid Alaskan experience who knows our educational system and has been successful for many years in our public education system to come to have this option to be able to come into our district to potentially serve our students. As Lisa Parity said, I do understand some of the dialogue behind the committee substitute regarding the amendments. I would rather they not be there. However, if I'm given the choice of having that there with a small cost of bringing a high-quality person into our district to serve our students, I'd be willing to take that cost on, because having that experience, Alaskan experience and success in Alaska means more to our students than bringing somebody up from the lower 48 who not only has to learn our public education system, but also the challenges of living in rural Alaska, which, as we all know, is unique to some other urban environments in Alaska as well as the lower 48.
Thanks, Chris. Any questions for Chris Raitan, Superintendent of Galena? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next online, we have Patrick Mayer, Wrangell. Patrick, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on Senate Bill 79. So I am speaking in support of Senate Bill 79 as the superintendent of the Wrangell Public School District. And, of course, as my colleagues have mentioned, I would much prefer the original version than the amended version. However, I concur with them that we would rather have the bill as amended rather than no bill at all. With the national shortage of teachers, and this especially being true in Alaska, and especially, again, being true in rural Alaska, having this, the access to this veteran staff or these veteran staff members, you know, in a cost-effective manner is really going to be important for our district. You know, with the 12.5% contribution, that takes a little bit of the icing off the cake. But, you know, and I just want to assure members of the committee that this is really important and really is something that we need in a community like Wrangell. It is difficult with the teaching profession, educator profession, not being as attractive to candidates as it once was in Alaska, to be able to have access to this expertise that is represented within our retired teachers. And that is our main purpose. It's a tool in the toolbox that we really need. It's like trying to frame a house without a hammer at times. And I just see it as very positive, cost-effective for the retiree. There's an incentive for them to come back and work for us on an as-needed basis, and I really see it as win-win for the district and the retiree, and I appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Questions? Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris, thank you for your comments. We heard an interesting comment moments ago from Superintendent Walsh, Jack Walsh, at Craig, and he was talking about the 0.49 provision, which I really don't know much about. I think I need to know more about that from the administration. But and what he was saying is that if this bill passes, some of the advantages of using that 0.49 provision is eliminated. You're not saving the money in hiring a person as you under this bill. Do you have any comment on that? Does that do you hire any teachers at the, under that 0.49 provision?
Well, this is my first year in Wrangell, and we actually did bring back a person for a couple months here due to a teacher being out on maternity leave. But that's a fairly rare situation here in Wrangell. But, you know, it's something that can always come up, and you just have to play with the cards you're dealt. You know, we want to encourage new teachers to move to Wrangell and establish themselves, because once they come here to Wrangell, they tend to stay. But finding them in that pool of candidates is difficult. So I'm not certain whether that would, I mean, I don't see that as being a huge deterrent. I guess it's possible I'd have to explore it a little bit more. But really, every case is on a case-by-case basis. And, you know, in attending job fairs, I know many of my colleagues have difficulty filling positions. So it has to be evaluated in each particular scenario. But in terms of losing some benefits of 0.49, I'm not exactly sure.
Thank you, Chris.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Patrick.
All right, thank you.
So next we go to Barrow with Link Seidel. Link, are you still there?
Yeah. Thank you, Senator.
Can you identify yourself for the record and who you're with, please, Link? I'm sorry.
Sure. this is Lincoln Saito. I'm the Chief Operating Officer. And our superintendent, Peggy Cowan, is tied up right now, and she has asked me to speak for her about this bill. We are in favor of this bill. As the other superintendents have said, it's less attractive, but it is still attractive. To answer somebody's question, how much would it save? It's going to cost us, obviously, an extra 12.56% in order to hire people than it was before the amendment. So we would like the amendment to go away, but we would still support it because not paying the health insurance alone, in our case, would save 25% of our salaries. Mm-hmm. So, you know, giving you a third and us keeping two-thirds, that's still a benefit for us, and it would still save us, and for the same three reasons. You know, we want a larger pool of people to select from. We have one school. We have been to five job fairs in Anchorage and all across the country, all across Western United States, Northwestern. We've been to five job fairs, and in one school with 21 positions, we still have nine positions open. We cannot find people after going to five job fairs, and we're spending tens of thousands of dollars getting people there and searching for these teachers. We need a larger pool. We need to save the money. Things are going down that way. And the third thing is we need good teachers for our students. So it's not only just a larger pool, but somebody who has made it to retirement through tenure, who has that much experience, they're good teachers. And that's what we need for our students. Save the money, and we have a larger pool. So we're all for this. Thank you very much.
Questions for Mr. Saito? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. The fiscal note for SB 79 will be forthcoming from the department. Again, I have no desire to move a bill out onto the floor with a fiscal note that's large. So what I would like to do is move this bill to Committee on Regional Affairs as the next committee of referral, and then continue to work with the department on the fiscal note aspects and the other issues. But I think what we want to do is try and make sure we get a good tool here. Is there a motion to move it?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, but before I make the motion, I'm convinced that what we've been discussing here has more merits than it does demerits, and I think one of our testifiers put it perfectly. Okay, you get one-third and we get two-thirds benefit. That's good enough for me, and the dynamic I don't think that we appreciate enough is the shortage potentially in the pool of candidates that want to be teachers. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I move that CS for Senate Bill number 79 as amended with individual comments be moved to the next committee of referral. That is version echo.
Hearing no objection, committee substitute for Senate Bill 79 is moved from committee with individual recommendations as amended with fiscal note forthcoming. We're going to take a brief at ease. Thank you. Attention to committee substitute for Senate Bill 89, version P, which was adopted on April 2nd. Yeah, sorry about that. Are there any amendments?
Yep, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins.
I have amendment number one. I move amendment number one.
I object for purposes of discussion. Do we have someone here that will talk to Amendment 1? My staff member, Bethany Markham. Please come forward, state your name for the record.
Bethany Markham, staff for Senator Dunleavy. Amendment 1 is primarily administrative language changes, but there's one that does have some change in terms of the meaning. So the first change is in several different places in the CS. It talks about allowing parents to take certain actions. So that language has been replaced with recognizing the authority of and allowing parents to. And that's in three different places, on lines 9 and 11 of page 1, and then on page 2, line 8, that change was made. The amendment would also deal with some awkward language, performance standard, in several different places. The CS talked about being absent from a performance standard, for example, or withdrawing from a performance standard. So you can, of course, be absent from a class that covers a performance standard, but you can't be absent from an actual performance standard. So that phrase, performance standard, is removed in 8 different places, and it is kept in one place where it's talking about the content of the course. So a parent would still be able to review the performance standard and then could, of course, opt to withdraw from a class that covers that performance standard. So that just kind of clears up that language. The third change in the amendment is to give the school districts more time, a more flexible time window to collect permission from the parents, and that on page two on line 4, it changes 1 month to 6 weeks. And then the fourth change to the amendment is on page 2, line 25, it simply adds the word separate for clarity as far as the permission needs to be for each separate activity. Those are the changes in Amendment 1, Senator.
Thank you. Any questions pertaining to the memo or Amendment 1? And I'm going to get into a larger discussion here in just a moment. Okay. Let's take a brief at ease, just very brief. Session. We just had Amendment 1 introduced, and it was the particulars were discussed and highlighted by staff member Bethany Markham, staff for myself. I'm going to remove my objection. Excuse me. Before I remove my objection, any discussion related to the Amendment 1 that was laid out by staff member Bethany Markham?
The only thing I would add is that the first line is the really the only one that changes much in the way of meaning. The first change, and that is changing the word allowing to recognizing the authority of an allowing, and basically is to reinforce that parental rights are inherent. Most of the other changes are smaller administrative language changes.
Thank you. So, any discussion on this particular amendment? Seeing none, I'm going to remove my objection. Amendment 1 has been adopted. This takes us, is there a second amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I have amendment number 2. I move amendment number 2.
Amendment number 2 has been moved. With that, I object for discussion. And can we have a description of amendment number 2?
Yes, amendment number 2 to CSSB 89 would prevent abortion service providers from contracting with school districts.
Chairman, I've got two amendments here. Which one are we dealing with? SP.2 or?
Yes.
P.2.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Are we ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Bethany?
So the amendment number 2 would prevent abortion service providers from contracting with school districts and educational service organizations. It would also prohibit abortion service providers from supplying materials on human sexuality and sexually transmitted diseases to school districts. And it would also not allow them to provide instruction on those same topics.
So, questions, discussion? Senator, please.
Wouldn't it make more sense to tell a school district, I mean, if we were going to go down this path, what kinds of materials they're allowed to provide or what issues they're allowed to address, and just ensure that nobody in the building, that they don't authorize materials that contravene those standards? I mean, is it not possible that a religious organization might be providing materials that would be objectionable in principle under this amendment? I mean, why? Because the issue is not who's providing the materials, it's what materials are being provided, regardless of who provides it.
And so, tell me again what you're thinking. State that again, please.
Well, the underlying interest is in having control over what kind of materials are provided and what information is provided. Am I correct?
Yes, and not necessarily having an industry representatives in the school.
Is the objection the industry representative, or is the objection the material?
It's the message in the school for a captive audience, which kids are, they're a captive audience. And for many folks, it's a very good question, I'm glad you brought it up, seriously. For many folks, even today, many folks, when I have discussions with parents, they believe they're putting their children on the bus to go learn the 3 R's. And inevitably, somebody says, you know, there was a mini lesson today, or there was a presenter today, or there was this today. And, you know, Dunleavy, I thought this was supposed to be about mathematics or science or whatever, and I really prefer to have these discussions with my child at home. I don't really necessarily want to have this happening in the schools. On this particular issue, there are many folks, obviously myself included, that believe that this is not necessarily an appropriate venue for this topic or folks to be part of that industry, having kids in a captive audience.
So, if I might, Mr. Chair, what about if it's a condom manufacturer or a birth control pharmaceutical company providing information about sexuality or sexually transmitted diseases?
Right, that's a good question. That's a good question.
You got an amendment?
It was a good question, though. Senator.
Well, Mr. Chairman, isn't the subject the same? We're again talking about an industry coming in to market a product to a captive audience. So I think the same philosophy would apply to companies.
Yeah, it's a topic that is not necessarily shared by the parents of the captive audience, that it's a topic that should be taught in that particular venue or discussed in that particular venue?
It's not about the marketing of the product, because that's not addressed by the language of the amendment. It's just the provider. And it also seems to me that given the strong language about options to withdraw or not have children participate in any instruction concerning sexuality or sexually transmitted diseases, and the parents' right to review the materials beforehand, I don't understand why this particular message would be needed. And a parent who is concerned about these issues and knows that it's going to happen not more than 6 weeks, not less than 2 weeks, notice the sign, can simply say, well, I disagree with this topic, I disagree with this provider, I disagree with this material, I disagree with this timing, whatever it is they want. So I just don't see that this amendment is needed. I mean, this amendment clearly is targeted for one particular organization, and you can make the argument it's, if you object to the organization, that's one thing, but a bunch of different organizations might provide material about all of this that's objectionable for any number of reasons, and the parents already, under the body of the bill, have every opportunity to know what's happening, when it's happening, what's being used, and who's doing it, and to not provide their active consent.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm looking at the words here, and in on page 192, it talks about contracting with a provider. So it's actually bringing in instructors from outside of the education system. We're also talking about those providers supplying, frankly, medical services, which I don't know how they could not promote them in their presentation to minors, which of course would require, we would require parental consent, of course, to do a physical exam on these children for a sports physical, but here we have actually medical intervention being discussed.
Yeah, yes, in some ways we really don't know what's being discussed to the degree it's being discussed. And so for myself, for example, I am the author of the amendment, is, again, it's my belief, and the belief not just comes from within myself, but from a number of folks, parents, but also folks associated with school districts that don't necessarily believe it is an appropriate place for this, I don't want to call it stuff, it sounds, but this industry, marketing, however you want to word it, that it's really the place for schools is for kids to learn content, mathematics, reading, social studies, etc. What I get from folks quite frequently, and you'll see a thread running through a number of these bills I'm trying to do, is we don't have enough time to do everything, and some of the things that we're doing, we're really not sure if it should be happening in the schools. We're not, in my opinion, thank goodness, we're not being graded on our reproductive assessments, but we would like to focus on the things we thought school was about. Again, this is parents and practitioners, teachers, administrators in school districts.
Yes. In that case, why not simply say that school districts and schools may not provide materials or instruction about sexuality or sexually transmitted diseases?
You ask if the center is offering an amendment?
Say again?
Are you? I mean, not seriously. Would you? Are you offering an amendment?
I'm not offering that amendment because I think that there are times when schools should, when that information should be available to students. School nurses, for example. They have a student who comes in and has a question. I mean, as a parent, I answer questions. And I think that teachers want to answer questions, too, that come to them. But that's a whole different argument. So I'm not going to provide that as an amendment. But that sounds to me the subtext of what we're really doing. And your conversation here about it, that's basically what it's saying. It doesn't belong in schools, and schools should focus on reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Senator Huggins.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you look at it, left hand, right hand, so my wife and I's child goes to school, and we have, the school nurse has a bottle of aspirin, and the school nurse is going to dispense that. We have to have a written permission slip for the school nurse to be able to administer an aspirin. And I submit to you that I don't remember the exact details of the legislation, but we prohibited the staff of school to be able to do certain things because they were medical practitioners, if you will. And there is, and I don't, somebody can resurrect that, and you may have it committed to memory, but there it is very explicit about what staff can't do because of the abuses that were happening. That was been within the last 5 to 10 years. I wished I'd all of that today. And this is just, in my estimation, a reinforcement of that.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a distinct difference between an educator in the school, a teacher, who's teaching biology and teaching human physiology, versus an individual from outside the school, not employed by that school, held to those standards, but actually working for a company or industry that comes into the school. Their credentials will be known, and that in fact is promoting that particular business or industry. And so I think what this is attempting to get to is the fact that certainly in science classes, a teacher in a school is presenting certain facts. However, the belief is that those facts, first of all, will be unbiased. And secondly, if they are perceived to be something that parents would want to know about, that the school would inform those parents. And there would be a consent procedure.
Mm-hmm. You've given me some ideas for potential future amendments.
Well, this amendment, and we'll just call a spade, is about keeping Planned Parenthood out of schools. That's what this amendment is about. And I would argue, as I have, that if you want people to not, if you want students to not be provided information or materials about sexuality or about sexually transmitted diseases in schools, then just say that. If you want the material to comply, to be unbiased and approved, say that. If you want parents to know about it and give written permission for it, the bill already does that with or without this amendment. So I don't see any point whatsoever in having this amendment in the bill.
It's a good discussion. Senator Huggins.
Well, yeah, very good. So let's just assume for a moment your point about Planned Parenthood. I mean, we have separation of church and state. Maybe we should have separation of Planned Parenthood and school.
It's a different discussion. But, you know, you have the condom manufacturer doing the same thing, or you have, I mean, do you want a church to be teaching sexuality? No, but if that goal is to prevent outsiders or unvetted material or biased material, you could put a whole bunch of different organizations, and you're never going to be able to capture everything you want. What you want is that the material is approved, not unbiased, that it's provided by qualified, competent people. If you want the material provided at all, or you say you don't want it provided.
Again, good discussion. I'm going to remove my objection on this amendment.
And I'll object.
Okay. We do have an objection. So can we do a vote on this? Nancy?
Senator Huggins?
Yes. Correction. Let me correct that. The vote, a yes vote is for the objection, or a yes vote is for the amendment?
The yes would be the support. Would be adopt the amendment.
Yep. Yes.
Senator Giesel?
Yes.
Senator Gardner?
No.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Chair Dunleavy?
Yes. So the amendment passes. So now we go into public testimony. Is there anyone online that would like to testify on the bill? Seriously? Okay. We have a number of folks. This is good. So let's go first with Lincoln Saito, once again in Barrow. That was two. Lincoln Saito, are you still online up in Barrow?
Yes, Senator.
Link, please go ahead, state your name for the record again, and begin your testimony on the bill. And the bill that we're on is SB 89.
Yes, Senator, this is Lincoln Saito. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the North Slope Borough School District, and we feel that this bill is encroaching on our local school board's rights, generally. We have people from our regional corporation that we welcome to come in to speak to our students, to inspire our students. And we have people from our nonprofit corporations and come in to speak to our students, to do demonstrations. They're not sexually related, or we do surveys. We want feedback on drug use, on smoking, on alcohol use, not in the school, but for the welfare of our students as it affects their learning. Specifically, so generally we object that this is our local school district's right to control who goes into our schools, and specifically we object to getting written permission in order to conduct any of these surveys, like about smoking or alcohol use, to see if our education programs are making a difference. So that's where we stand. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Saito? Seeing none, we will go to the next individual. Is it John Watts in Fairbanks?
Yes, sir.
John, could you please identify yourself for the record, who you're with, and begin your testimony?
I've already told her to put you on the list for the next one, too.
Study it.
Thank you. My name is... And I'm here representing myself, my family, and also a group known
as... I got one person speaking on that number.
I think we're getting some feedback. Is there a...
Hey, we're going to take just a brief at ease to try and figure the audio out. Hang on, folks. Back online. So, John, are you there? We're getting some overlapping conversations. We don't know if that's happening within your LIO or if it's coming from somewhere else, but let's try it again.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is John Watts. I'm here with myself, my family, and also representing a group called Alaskans Against the Common Core. I'm asking that you please support this Senate Bill 89, and particularly that First Amendment there. Though we don't have any position on the Second Amendment per se. We have to say that we're, though a relatively small group, this concern is going on all over the country. There have been whole schools that have walked out basically because of these issues. Up here we're sort of a canary in the coal mine. our main issue relative to the concern and permissions and so forth is the privacy issues. Both the 14th Amendment and Article 1 of Section 22 of the privacy rights for parents in particular covers this, and we're concerned about this, though there has been stated by deed that there is no data sharing within the state. It does go out to Kansas University and AII, for example, and virtually every one of the applications that the kids use for these assessments and tests and so forth, a BrainPop, Khan Academy, Odysseyware, Envision, are all funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and all of that data is shared later down the road. And honestly, their concern about our kids' safety is much less than ours is. And you may notice there's a dropping enrollments in the schools and basically record lows where kids are transferring over to homeschooling to avoid these sort of top-down intrusive sort of programs. And ultimately, that harms the teachers because there's less students out there participating in the classes. And again, nobody really wants to be on the side of data abuses for the children out there.
John,
and I'm sure
you're going to have to wrap up your testimony, John, and as it pertains to 89. If you can wrap up, that would be great. We have a whole number of folks that want to testify.
Yes, sir. That was it, in fact.
Okay, thank you. I think we have another individual in Fairbanks with the same last name, Monica Watts.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, can you identify yourself for the record, who you're with, and begin your testimony, please? Figure about 3 minutes, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
My name is Monica Watts. I'm a mother of five. I have three grown, successful, productive members, three kids that are grown and successful that went through the school system here. I currently have two children in the school system. I'm concerned about the wording that has the Department of Education allowing me to make certain decisions concerning my children. As a parent, I have a fundamental right under the U.S. Constitution, 14th Amendment, to make decisions concerning my child's education. The law of the Alaska Department of Education is not superior to that law. I do not need the permission of deed or for deed to allow me to make decisions concerning my children. So please reflect my natural rights in SB 89.
Thank you. We're going to go next here in Juneau. Allison Curry, could you please come forward, state your name for the record, who are you with, and begin your testimony, and figure about 3 minutes, please.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. I'll do my best. My name is Allison Curry. I'm a staff with Planned Parenthood Votes Northwest and a current resident of Juneau. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify today. And I am testifying in opposition to Senate Bill 89. As a reproductive health care provider and a sexual health educator, Planned Parenthood sees the devastating effects of sexual abuse and sexually transmitted infections every day. While this bill appears to be about parental rights, it does have dangerous consequences that put the health and future of our youth at risk, especially those youth who have absent or disengaged parents. Parental involvement in their children's education is vital, and it should be encouraged. Nobody is debating this fact. However, since we've heard in previous testimony, we do live in a state with child sexual abuse rates 6 times higher than the national average, and our state also continues to lead the nation with the highest STI rates. And our teens are at the highest risk for infections. In 2013, 63% of new cases of chlamydia were between 15 to 19-year-olds. We should be working together to ensure that our youth have the resources and information to lead healthy and productive lives, and we feel that Senate Bill 89 does the opposite of this. This bill would affect access not only to sexual health education, but also extends to education on sexual assault and awareness, like in Aaron's Law. Planned Parenthood does work closely with some schools, community organizations, and other social service agencies in Alaska to provide a variety of education opportunities that are tailored for each community. Subjects that Planned Parenthood teaches are all on prevention. We cover healthy relationships, consent, values and boundaries, as well as pregnancy prevention. By targeting providers of a safe and legal service who are also qualified providers of sexual health education, we are cutting Alaska students off from the information and education they need to make smart choices about their health. Comprehensive sex education has consistently proven to delay the onset of sexual activity. It's been proven to lower rates of sexually transmitted infections as well as lower teen pregnancy rates. So really, we cannot afford to limit access to the tools that kids need to make healthy choices. And with that, I respectfully ask that you consider the health and safety of all Alaskan youth and pull this bill from consideration. Thank you.
Any questions for members of the committee? Senator.
Thank you. Can you speak a little bit about chlamydia rates in Alaska, teen pregnancy rates generally? And I'm sorry, I had to step out, so if you have to.
Oh, not a problem. Yes, I did touch on the chlamydia rates. Teen pregnancy rates, I'll have to follow up with your staff and if the rest of the committee would like that information.
Thank you, and I'm sorry I missed the first part of your presentation.
For chlamydia rates, since about year 2000, Alaska has led the nation with the highest chlamydia rates. We're currently twice the national average, have been since 2013. In some regions of the state, we're triple to quadruple the national average for chlamydia. And teens age range 15 to 19 have the highest rates as well. So 2013, the data shows that about 63% of the new chlamydia cases were from ages 15 to 19.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
How long has Planned Parenthood been in the state of Alaska?
Ooh, that's a good question. I know Juneau Health Center has been here since 2009. I would have to follow up with how long the organization has been in Alaska.
Senator?
Why is it important to pay attention to chlamydia rates? What are the consequences of untreated, undiagnosed chlamydia?
Through the chair, Senator Gardner, infertility is the most dire impact. Chronic pelvic pain, another problem with chlamydia, it is asymptomatic. So if you don't know to get tested, to get continually tested if you are sexually active, then it can cause infertility. So that would be the most devastating.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Senator Diesel, sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I'm just following up on that question you just asked. How long has Planned Parenthood been in Alaska? I understand you weren't able to give an answer. I would suggest that it's been substantially longer than 2009. I'm a healthcare provider myself, and and yet, despite your presence, we're pretty high rate of chlamydia. So just suggesting that perhaps the presence of Planned Parenthood in the schools doesn't actually prevent chlamydia. There are other factors here. But my other question to you is, I've seen the video evidence from undercover investigations of Planned Parenthood in other states, which documents inappropriate advice given to underage females concerning sexual conduct. Is that an issue related to, let's see, this is Planned Parenthood of the Northwest?
Yes, of the Great Northwest. Through the chair, Council, could you provide an example of what inappropriate advice you're speaking of?
There were multiple examples by undercover investigations. I find it hard to believe that you're not aware of them since they were nationally publicized, one being an underage female being told not to disclose her age when she was engaged in sexual activity with an older male. That's just one example. Abortion advice being given, again, to underage females. It was pretty widely advertised. You must be aware of them.
Through the chair, Senator Giesel. Planned Parenthood Votes Northwest does have a strict policy for mandatory reporting, so any female under, or any minor female that does disclose that she has had been sexually active with an older male, we do report that. We are required by law, and that is part of our policy. So none of our healthcare staff or educators or advocacy staff would ever instruct a young girl to keep that to themselves. We would instruct that we are mandated to report that. As far as instruction on abortion, we also are not at liberty to do so per our policy. We provide our healthcare staff provides all pregnancy options, and it is up to the patient to make that decision. For minors, we do abide by Alaska state law, and there is the law on the books that says we have to notify parents if a minor does come in and require and requests abortion services. So we comply by our own policies and standards as well as Alaska state law.
Very laudable. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next, we have online Taryn Luxey from North Pole. Taryn, are you online? Taryn, we'll come back to you.
Hello?
Taryn, are you online?
Yes.
Hi, Taryn. Could you please identify yourself for the record and who you're with? And take you about 3 minutes, please.
Okay, my name is Taryn Luxey. I am a homeschool mom representing myself. I homeschool through IDEA. I'm part of a very large IDEA Action for Our Children group that IDEA formed for its parents. I am also a member of Alaskans Against the Common Core. I am one that helped submit the committee substitute for SB 89, the AACC version. I'm just calling in support of that. This will affirm parents' natural rights and affect educational issues in the way that parents assume a parental rights bill would. The original, I appreciate the intent and the response from Senator Dunleavy. I don't think that it was intended, but it would end up putting parameters around our rights, and it would put the burden of proof on parents. There was some verbiage in there about religious holidays, but then we're seeing in other states parents are having to prove their membership at their church, synagogue, mosque, and they're being asked to cite what passage in their holy book, would prevent their children from participating. And really, what it boils down to is that parental rights trump all per the Constitution, as John Watts noted. And the addition, the substitute that AACC submitted had verbiage about parents' natural right, that the local school board shall recognize the natural right. We just kind of replaced all of that in the original with verbiage as such. We also added the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development shall recognize the natural right of parents to direct the education of their children. And here's the key part that's repeated a couple of times. No regulation shall be passed that infringes upon this right. And that just gets to the crux of the change that I would want to see in SB 89, is that it would be a measure of protection over pre-existing rights versus allowing or granting or being one of a group being consulted, as in line 6 of the original dated 325. Parents shouldn't be consulted alongside teachers, school administrators, etc. I'm not concerned, quite frankly, about protecting school board's rights. This, the parents' rights trump that. I'm also, quite frankly, not concerned about protecting Planned Parenthood's rights. No one is saying stop all sex ed in the classroom. That was not my intent, but why should a parent object if it's not objectionable? Now, if that parent were to object based on his or her own preferences or beliefs, shouldn't they have the opportunity? Shouldn't they have the right, to say, you know what, Johnny or Susie, we're going to read about this at home today. You're going to stay home from school, or go to a different room in school during that part. Shouldn't they have that opportunity? They have that right as is. I think people just aren't aware of it, and I just really don't want to put anything in place like the original, the March 25th version, that would place those parental rights into the hands of the legislator, saying that the legislature grants permission or allows or the verbiage about if the parents find it harmful. You know, eventually a day could come when the parents are asked to provide proof that it is harmful. And, of course, people have different definitions.
Karen, could you wrap up, please?
There should be no proof needed, no religious holiday to cite, none of that. It's for any reason.
Karen, could you please wrap up?
Yes, that was it.
Thank you very much. Any questions from members of the committee? Seeing none. Thank you. Next, we have online, we have Dr. Barbara Haney. Dr. Barbara Haney, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. Could you please identify yourself for the record, and if you're representing anyone, and then you can begin your testimony, please, and figure about 3 minutes.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Barbara Haney, and I'm a grandmother. I've raised several kids in this state. I'm calling in to support Senate Bill 89. Parents have a very strong vested interest in the outcome of their children's education, and that is a natural inherent right that they have from their, in my worldview, it's from their creator. But if you don't believe in a creator, you can look at nature and see that there is that right even among animals. In the context of the current debate, parents should have that right to refuse testing or refuse that their children's information be put into a P20 or any kind of data sharing arrangement. They should have the right to be able to object to certain types of testing or certain types of material that they deem, for whatever reason, is inappropriate for their children. I wholeheartedly support the amendment that was offered today. The other instance of the other issue that was raised, which I actually, quite frankly, did not anticipate, was the inclusion of banning Planned Parenthood, and I didn't expect to speak on that, but I can't say that I object at all to it. And the reason why I think it's a good idea is because of the case of Bill Diss in Oregon. Bill Diss is a teacher who was actually fired from the schools in Oregon. He's a math teacher. He didn't want his precious class time in advanced mathematics to be used for Planned Parenthood to deliver a certain curriculum. He thought it was more important that, or more appropriate that that curriculum be delivered in another class. And if you, I can send you the information on the article if you like, and you can see that there are teachers who have actually been fired for not allowing Planned Parenthood into their classes. Planned Parenthood does have a curriculum. They're one of the few providers out and they also have a set of standards that tie directly to the Common Core called the National Sexuality Standards. One of my daughters, who has been working in the Illinois school system, has had to, has come into contact with the curriculum, and she showed me some of the passages they're teaching, and I think even Senator Gardner would be very embarrassed at that curriculum. I have no problem with Planned Parenthood being banned from contracting. So, anyway, but I wholeheartedly support this amendment. This bill, Senate Bill 89, is long overdue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Senator Gardner.
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony and for taking the time to share it with us. Can you tell me in what way the national sexuality standards are tied to Common Core? Because my understanding is that Common Core standards deal with language arts and math only.
Right, but also embedded in those standards, there is something called informational texts. And so what they've been able to do is put together a reading curriculum that is tied to the informational text in the school district. In addition, they also have English language arts reading and writing standards that apply to grades 6 through 12. And I can send those to you. Alaska adopted them whole cloth. And that their curriculum does key to those standards and to the Alaska standards, I might add, because there's a coding document that provides the parallel for teachers. In addition, I would also encourage you to take a look at some of the other providers that also have informational texts that are key to Alaska standards through the Common Core standards. Our standards are sufficiently similar to the Common Core that they are, that other organizations are able to use that area called informational text to key into standards. to key into the standards and to the classroom. A lot of Alaska teachers are Alaskan by nature, and they're not probably going to go along with a lot of that stuff. But when I look at the case of Bill Bliss being fired, I'm sure Commissioner Hanley would never do such a thing. But we never know what future commissioner or future administrator might take the position that Oregon's administrator has taken. And so I think from the perspective of teachers and their own rights, we need to consider this amendment for Planned Parenthood as well.
Dr. Haig, I appreciate that. We have a number of other folks. Senator Gardner, do you have another question?
Thank you. I do. I'd like to suggest that perhaps what you're talking about in terms of the national sexuality standards and other materials that you find objectionable really have more to do with curriculum that's selected by a district or by a school or by a state or providers of curriculum, but not with the standards themselves. And while I'm not an expert on the specifics of the standards, I have read through them, and I understand that there are elements that suggest, for example, I'm speaking from memory, that sixth graders or maybe it's fourth graders should go to be able to read some source documents and take a position. And those source documents are not mandated, but a district could go to a newspaper, for example, or to common materials or a textbook that they have selected and use that. I guess not a textbook, it's not necessarily a source document.
If I could respond to
the Bill of Rights, for example.
If you take a look at the Medicaid expansion, there is some grant money for that the Obamacare legislation, there is grant money for the specific Planned Parenthood curriculum to be put in schools based on the Common Core standards. And that is a very specific curriculum. And while you can sit there and say districts can choose this, the reality is if Commissioner Hanley goes after that grant money, districts will be in a hard place to not offer it. How's that?
Dr. Haney, I appreciate it. We have other folks, but I do appreciate
it.
Okay, thank you. So Jack Walsh with Craig School District. Jack, if you're still there, please state your name for the record and who you're with.
Thank you, Senator. This is Jack Walsh. I'm the superintendent of the Craig City School District in Craig, Alaska. And I do appreciate the opportunity to speak. I'll be real short with this comment. My concern was about reading the Amendment 2, and I just wanted to make sure that, and again, I've heard the discussion. I've appreciated the comments by everybody. But a lot of my Alaskan experiences have been in small rural areas of the state. And, as it talked about the prohibitions on having people from abortion service providers, I just was hoping that somebody would assure me that somewhere down the line that would be defined, because I saw that people can't volunteer in our schools, they can't be under contract with our schools, and, in small communities, I worried that this would suddenly eliminate that pool of people that it comes to help us at many times about a lot of stuff. In terms of nurses, doctors, health professionals that might be there, if, the way I did a little research just trying to figure out what the Indian Health Service and Public Health Service suggested about what they could and couldn't do with abortion, and I just wanted to make sure that, for the good of schools that don't have school nurses or other people that can provide these things, that we aren't eliminating some really skilled people from talking to kids about issues that are very important in terms of human sexuality, diseases, or any of those other things.
Thank you, Jack. And for those folks that are waiting to testify on SB 37, it's now 15 minutes after 5 o'clock. We still have a number of testifiers here online and possibly in the audience for SB 89. We're going to have to finish that up. So I would say that it may be very difficult for us to get to 37 here today.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
I have a question for Mr. Walsh and
Senator Gardner, go ahead.
For other school districts, since this seems to be on a fast track to come out of committee, and I have questions for districts generally about what the impact on all the provisions of this bill would be, the cost about providing notice and assuring and tracking permission slips for tests, for certain kinds of teaching, and also what would be the impact on the validity of test results, particularly when they're used to measure student progress and that, again, becomes part of a teacher evaluation? Are there concerns about distorting the data that's available when there might be people, you know, a significant number of people pulling their children out? And, you know, if you have concerns about the overall impact on students' education and costs. So I don't need it right now, but just I would like to know.
There are costs and challenges involved. As a school district that serves 300 students in Craig and 300 students across the state in a correspondence program, we're fairly unique. You know, there aren't a lot of districts that have both of those things out there to deal with. We do worry that if too many parents choose to opt out on different kinds of assessments or on different kinds of surveys and things that we want, we don't get a real good picture of a school's climate or connectedness or some of those other things about test scores aren't as reliable when we have small numbers to start and a large percentage of the people don't participate. So I apologize. I'm probably not the person to talk on behalf of other districts or lots of districts, but I do believe that there are some challenges to the cost and the mailing of things that are significant to smaller districts in particular, but probably challenges for every district.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate it. We're going to move on to Ed Gray in Sitka. Ed, are you there? Mr. Gray, are you available in Sitka?
Yes, Senator. It's Ed Gray in Sitka. Yes, thank you for this opportunity. I came today to support Senate Bill 89, and I support Amendment 1 and Amendment 2. I would like to first, if I can, address my comments to Amendment 2. The amendment addresses the abortion industry. We're talking about the abortion industry coming into our middle school and having the opportunity to influence and sell their product in our middle school. Now, I know this because we've had that here in Sitka. I know this. And our school district even went so far as to collect our students' email information and turn that over to the abortion industry. Now, this is the one industry that has an interest in our students making bad decisions. It's the one industry that we opposes what we parents want. And so I strongly support Amendment 2 and believe that asking our legislation to protect our children from that is appropriate. We work constantly to try to protect the most precious thing we have. We invest our children in the schools. We send them there, and it's just reasonable that we would ask the legislature to help us protect our children from that. Now, Amendment 1, Senate Bill 89 and Amendment 1, I've had children in the district for 11 years, and I've been active. I'm passionate about it. I invest my children there. And for 11 years, I've had a pretty solid relationship with my school district. I've advocated for them. They've advocated for me. We've got along. That ended this year. This it ended because I no longer could make, I was told I could no longer make, to continue to make decisions for my children, that I no longer had that right. And asking questions in my district became, it became an issue. Asking questions became an issue in my district, to where I was threatened with charges against me for asking questions. That's what's happening in our district.
Mr. Gray, I apologize, but we have other folks, and we're trying to just limit it to 3 minutes. If you can wrap up, then we can move on to other people.
Yes, Senator, I'm sorry. Yes, and I will go ahead and move on, and I will cede the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Mike Coons. Mr. Coons, can you identify yourself for the record, who you are with, if anyone, and begin your testimony, and we're going to stick with 3 minutes.
I'll keep it down there. My name is Mike Coons. I'm from Palmer, and I'm speaking for myself as a drink. Dual retired income, no kids. I fully support the Amendment 1 and Amendment 2. I also support SB 89. Major reason is that over the decades, there have been less and less control by parents and what their children get taught in school. I'd like to expand Section 1, Line 13, involving human reproduction, health, and sex education. For far too long, environmentalism has been taught over that a tried-and-true science of conservationism. Then there's the teaching of our nation's history with major revisionism and even rewriting of the Bill of Rights. This is not a recent situation. Since when I was a sophomore back in the 60s, our world history teacher taught communism over that of our republic and was a card-carrying communist. That resulted in me being kicked out of class for standing for my nation twice. Of more recent events, Islam is being taught in classrooms, yet under the guise of separation of church and state, Christianity is not allowed. For those parents that are involved in their children's education, they must have the ability to say yes or no to what their children are being taught. They must have the ability to take their children out of classes that are one-sided, teach outside of family beliefs, religiously or not, or teach as politically correct revisionism of our great nation's history. In answer to Senator Stevens' comments last week concerning the opting out as it relates to SB 37, his concern was that maybe some of those parents who opt out are part of the problem. Thus, the abused child will not get this information. Friends and others will talk about what they are learning, so that child may very well pick up on that same information, be more comfortable about going to a teacher with questions and calling for help. Also, the training will increase the chances of the teachers picking up on behavior of a child at risk. This is not a fix by any means, but to oppose the opting out as per this bill is not reasonable. Lastly, if a child completes a semester, completes all assignments, quizzes, tests during the class, and gets a C or above, there is no need to add the AMP testing or any other testing. So long as the class is fulfilling the standards and the child is passing, then that report card of a C or better is all that is needed, much less the cost savings on not doing testing that proves nothing. And let me add, from what Senator Gardner's comment was, that the report cards that they still give an indication of what a teacher is doing, if they're doing good or not. If you got a bunch of kids that are failing, that are getting C's and D's and F's, there's probably a problem with the teacher. So that is all we really need. We don't need AMP testing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Coons. Any questions? We still have a number of folks who testify. We're going to try and wrap this up here shortly. So let's go to Rachel Sieber and Wasilla. Are you online?
Yes, hello.
Hi. Please begin. You have about 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Rachel Sieber, and I'm calling for myself. I'm a homeschool mom of five, and I was originally calling about the Amendment 1, that change in wording, and I appreciate Amendment 1. It reminded me of our Constitution, the term self-evident. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that parents should have the right to make decisions about their children's education. I appreciate Amendment 1 and what it does for parental rights across the state. I have to say, like Barbara Haney, I was unaware of Amendment 2, but I'm so glad I listened in to all of this committee meeting so that I could hear about Amendment 2. I strongly support Amendment 2. the name of the organization that you were talking about earlier. That's called liveaction.org. They are the ones who've done the undercover investigations into Planned Parenthood and some of the dangerous teaching that's going on in Planned Parenthood. And I would highly recommend everyone there on the committee check out liveaction.org and see some of the things that are going on in Planned Parenthood and how it affects those children. So in conclusion, I just want to say thank you for bringing forward these two amendments and how important they are to us as parents.
Thank you. Next, we have Posey Boggs in Anchorage. Please begin your testimony. You have 3 minutes.
Hi. Thank you, Senator Dunleavy and Senate Education Committee members. It's great to see you guys today. I am looking at this bill's wording of SB 89 in a little bit different light and a very specific section, and maybe what I'm asking for is some clarification on section 1 and its item in A2, providing a parent with the opportunity to review the content of assessment, I'm skipping over, so test assessments. Those, would like clarification. Does that include, for example, diagnostic tests like the Woodcock-Johnson assessment that one would take to get qualified for special education? Does it include a test like the Gray Oral Reading Test? What exactly does that include? Because the way I read this, I have a master's in educational diagnostics, this is telling me that I actually have to open the manual, open the test, and show parents exactly what is on that test. And that's what the word content is telling me on the line there. And if that is true, then my professional standards disallows that. I'm not even allowed to take a testing protocol and turn it over in a due process hearing in a court without a subpoena. And so I'm just asking for clarification.
Sure.
And if that's what you really are saying.
Sure. The intent was not to have anyone breach any protocols or test security or risk teaching standards or the certificate. That's not the intent of the bill.
And what words in here would tell me that?
Repeat that, please.
I'm wondering if I were just randomly reading this bill, what words in this bill tell me that the intent would not include those kind of tests and protocols?
Bethany, do you want to say something?
Bethany Markham, staff for Senator Dunleavy. Senator Dunleavy, the language, that we actually discussed this language with legislative legal, and they use language that is standard in the statutes and regulations for department-mandated standards-based tests. We never discussed screenings or diagnostics with them, so they chose this language. We actually requested different language, but they chose this language because it was consistent in the regulations and statutes with the type of assessment that is not administered by teachers, but rather that is required by the department for measuring students against each other as opposed to for classroom use.
Thank you. We have one more individual online, Sacha Pettit. If you could, we're going to have to cut you down to about a minute and a half here, Sacha, because we're running out of time.
That's okay. I just have a few things to say. My name is Sacha Pettit. I'm a 7th grade language arts teacher for the Matthew Grove School District, and I support this bill. I do urge you to reword some of the sections to protect a parent's existing natural rights. I would like the wording to reflect not only the religious belief of a parent, but also just a parental preference, and that right is not in particular being granted by legislators or by the DEED, but that it's an innate right, or as Rachel said, self-evident. To address a comment from Senator Gardner to Barb Haney earlier concerning curriculum and standards, as an English teacher with MSBSE, our standards are curriculum, and what other people may refer to as curriculum are being referred to as curriculum resources. It's very confusing, and I've gone over it various times with other people in the department in the building, but that is how it is that too many, my concern is that overall, you know, I've heard if parents, too many parents opt out of the surveys or the AMPs, that we will not have an accurate representation of data. But my concern is that I would venture to say is that parents opting out should be an indicator of a revision or a need that needs to be addressed. Parental choice is an integral part of the checks and balances that are needed in the educational system. The best students I have in my class have very, very involved parents, and I would hate to take away any of their choices from them or to say that their choices are given to them through an organization such as DED or legislators. And so I just urge you to look at that wording and reword it. I do agree with the bill. I like it overall, and I'm really excited about some of the things that it's saying, but that was my one concern.
Thank you very much. I knew it would garner some discussion. So we're going to hold the bill till Thursday, pick up with remaining public testimony, and it's my intent to move the bill on Thursday. So with that, we're going to recess, and we'll be back on Thursday. Adjourn.